Ekatra Podcast, Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're tackling a really big one, Sir Roger Penrose's explosive argument, basically, that this whole idea of strong AI, you know, conscious machines, it isn't some inevitable revolution, but maybe more like a delusion.
Yeah, it's kind of a modern day fable he's painting where, you know, people are admiring this amazing AI consciousness that, according to Penrose, simply isn't there.
And it feels incredibly relevant right now, doesn't it? With all the hype around generative AI, it often sounds like we're just steps away from creating truly thinking machines.
Exactly. But Penrose, coming from this deep background in fundamental physics, he argues that the entire computational framework, the very foundation AI is built on, it's fundamentally incapable of producing what we experience as genuine consciousness. The book, of course, is The Emperor's New Mind. And that title, it's a direct challenge, right? Suggesting this widely accepted computational theory of mind might just be, well, like the emperor's invisible clothes in the fable. We all pretend to see something that isn't real.
Mm-hmm. And his goal in the book is huge. He sets out to show that before we can even really understand the mind, let alone replicate it, we actually need a fundamental overhaul of the laws of physics as we know them.
It's quite a journey he takes us on, connecting mathematics, quantum mechanics, gravity, and ultimately the nature of human thought itself.
It really is.
So let's talk about the man himself. Who is Sir Roger Penrose? Because he's not your typical AI commentator or a neuroscientist.
No, definitely not. He's one of the most distinguished mathematical physicists of our time, yeah. A giant in the field.
He won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2020, right?
Yeah.
For his work on black holes, often with Stephen Hawking.
That's right. Groundbreaking work showing that black hole formation is, well, a robust prediction of Einstein's general relativity. So he's an absolute world authority on cosmology, on the fundamental physical laws governing the universe.
And that background, that physics first perspective, gives him such a unique angle on consciousness. He doesn't start with the brain's wiring or psychology.
No, he starts right from the bottom up. He looks at the basic laws of reality at physics and asks, you know, do the laws as we currently understand them even allow for something like consciousness to arise?
And his answer is basically no.
Pretty much. He argues that our current understanding is incomplete. His deep knowledge of mathematics, particularly things like Gödel's theorems and even his work on Penrose tilings, these sort of impossible objects, it gives him the tools to argue this.
So he frames the problem of the mind not as a biological or computational puzzle primarily, but as a gap in fundamental physics.
Exactly. Specifically, he points to the tension, the unresolved conflict between quantum mechanics and general relativity. That's where he thinks the secret to consciousness lies hidden.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself. The core mission, as you said, is to dismantle this idea of the brain as just a complex biological computer.
Yeah, and you can really break his central argument into two main parts. First, there's the critique.
Right.
He argues that human consciousness, especially genuine understanding and insight, it's fundamentally non-algorithmic. It can't be reduced to a set of rules or a program.
Meaning no computer, no matter how powerful, could ever truly replicate it.
That's his claim. And because of that, the second part is his proposal. Where does consciousness actually come from then?
This is where it gets really radical.
It is. He proposes that consciousness is a physical phenomenon, but one that arises from specific non-computable quantum mechanical processes, processes that our current physics doesn't fully describe yet.
So understanding the mind means we first need a revolution in physics itself.
That's the core idea. And the book takes you through everything needed to make that case: computation theory, Turing machines, philosophy of math, Platonism, classical physics, quantum mechanics, before finally zeroing in on potential mechanisms in the brain. It really shows how interconnected all these, you know, seemingly separate fields are when you ask this fundamental question about awareness.
All right, let's unpack that argument step by step. He starts by tackling the computational theory of mind head on, right? And the famous Turing test.
Yeah, the Turing test basically asks if a machine can fool a human into thinking it's also human through conversation. Strong AI proponents often point to it, but Penrose says, hold on, simulating behavior isn't the same as actual understanding.
It's just imitation.
Exactly. And he uses John Searle's Chinese room argument to illustrate this. It's a really famous thought experiment.
Can you walk us through that quickly?
Sure. Imagine someone, let's say an English speaker who doesn't know any Chinese, locked in a room. They get slips of paper with Chinese characters pushed under the door. That's the input.
Right.
Inside, they have a huge detailed rule book, like a massive algorithm that tells them exactly which Chinese characters to send back out the output in response to the input characters.
So they're just following instructions, matching symbols.
Precisely. From the outside, it looks like the person in the room understands Chinese perfectly. They're having a coherent conversation. But the person inside, they don't understand a single word. They're just manipulating symbols according to rules.
That's the key distinction. Syntax versus semantics.
Yes. Computation, Penrose argues, is pure syntax following rules, manipulating symbols. But consciousness, true understanding, requires semantics, actual meaning, comprehension. The person in the room has syntax down, but zero semantics.
And computers, he argues, are fundamentally like the person in that room. They only ever do syntax.
That's the claim. He then formalizes this by talking about Turing machines, the theoretical model for all digital computation. The Church-Turing thesis states that anything effectively calculable can be computed by a Turing machine.
So if strong AI is right, the brain must be equivalent to some kind of Turing machine.
It has to be, within that framework. But then Penrose makes this leap. He says the human mind does things no algorithm, no Turing machine ever could.
And how does he argue that? This seems like the crux of it.
It really is. He moves away from machines and into the nature of mathematics itself. He argues for what's called Platonic mathematical reality.
Meaning mathematical truths exist objectively, like mountains waiting to be discovered, not just invented by us.
Exactly. Think of the Mandelbrot set, that incredibly complex fractal. We didn't invent its structure. We discovered it by exploring a simple equation. Penrose suggests that when humans genuinely understand a mathematical truth, when we see it, that act of insight isn't algorithmic. It's a direct perception of this Platonic reality.
Okay, so we have non-algorithmic insight in mathematics. How does that connect back to computation limits?
This sets up his knockout punch, Gödel's incompleteness theorems.
Ah, yes. Famously difficult but crucial here. Can you give us the simple version?
I'll try. Gödel proved, essentially, that for any consistent formal system of rules, think of it like a computer's programming or a set of mathematical axioms. If it's complex enough to include basic arithmetic, then there will always be true statements that can be formulated within that system, but which cannot be proven using only the rules of that system.
So there are truths the system itself is blind to, even though they are expressible in its own language.
Precisely. They are unprovable from within.
And Penrose's move here is bold.
Very. He says human mathematicians, using insight and understanding, can often step outside the system, so to speak, and just see that these unprovable Gödel statements are, in fact, true.
But a computer, being nothing more than the implementation of that formal system,
must remain blind. It's bound by the rules. It can't have that aha moment of insight that steps outside the predefined axioms. So Penrose argues, our ability to perceive these Gödelian truths demonstrates a non-algorithmic quality of the human mind that transcends any possible computation.
Wow. So that's the mathematical proof for him, that the mind is not a computer.
That's the core of his critique.
Okay, so if the mind isn't running an algorithm, where does this non-computable magic actually happen physically? We need some process in the brain that defies computation.
Right. And classical physics, Newtonian physics, it's all deterministic and algorithmic. You put in the initial conditions, you get the output, so that won't work. Penrose turns instead to the biggest mystery in modern physics, quantum mechanics.
And specifically, the measurement problem.
Yes. He focuses on the fundamental conflict in quantum theory. On one hand, you have the smooth, deterministic evolution of the quantum wave function, described by the Schrödinger equation. He calls this the U process. It's perfectly computable.
But then there's the measurement.
Yeah.
When we actually look or measure a quantum system,
it collapses. The wave function, representing all possibilities, suddenly and unpredictably jumps to a single definite state. He calls this the R process, for reduction of the state vector. And this process, the R process, is mysterious, seemingly random, and crucially for Penrose, he argues it's non-computable.
So he's basically saying the mystery of quantum measurement and the mystery of consciousness are linked.
He's saying the R process is the physical basis for non-computable thought. He proposes that this collapse isn't random, but an objective physical process. Objective reduction, or R, linked to quantum gravity effects, something we don't have a theory for yet.
Okay, wait. This is where many physicists and neuroscientists really part ways with him, right?
Yeah.
Proposing quantum effects are happening in a coordinated way in the warm, wet, messy environment of the brain seems unlikely to many. How does he even suggest this works?
It is wildly controversial, absolutely. But he doesn't just wave his hands. He, along with anesthesiologist Stuart Hameroff, developed a specific theory and proposed a location.
He critiques standard neural network models as too simple for this.
Yes, he thinks consciousness requires something operating at a deeper quantum level. He needed structures within neurons that could potentially sustain quantum coherence, keep the delicate quantum state alive long enough for these OR events to happen.
And he lands on microtubules.
Microtubules. These tiny cylindrical protein filaments form the cytoskeleton, the internal scaffolding, inside neurons and other cells.
Okay.
Their theory, called orchestrated objective reduction, or OR, proposes that quantum computations build up within these microtubules, shielded somehow from the noisy environment, until they reach a certain threshold defined by quantum gravity principles. At that point, an OR event, a moment of objective reduction, occurs.
And that OR event is a moment of conscious experience, or proto-consciousness.
That's the hypothesis. A sequence of these orchestrated OR events constitutes our stream of consciousness. So he's linking moments of understanding, of insight, directly to these non-computable quantum gravity events happening within the neuronal cytoskeleton.
Quite a picture. From Gödel's theorems and the limits of computation, through Platonic math into the measurement problem and quantum gravity, all funneling down into these tiny protein tubes inside our brain cells.
It's an incredibly ambitious synthesis. The implication is profound. Consciousness isn't just something complex software running on biological hardware. It's tapping into a fundamental, non-computable feature of physical reality itself, a feature linked to the missing laws of quantum gravity.
Which brings us nicely to the key themes. The first one has to be this strong rejection of reductionism, right? Consciousness isn't just an emergent property of complexity. It needs new physics.
Absolutely. It's not just more computing power or better algorithms. It's a different kind of physical process entirely.
And theme two, flowing from that, is the power of non-algorithmic insight. This human capacity for genuine creativity, for that intuitive leap, for seeing truth that's the signature of consciousness, something machines fundamentally lack.
Yeah. It's like, you know, a computer can follow a recipe perfectly, but it can't invent nouvelle cuisine. That spark of true originality, that's non-algorithmic.
He also talks about his three worlds model, doesn't he, as a way to frame this.
Mm-hmm. He posits three interconnected but distinct realities: the Platonic world of perfect mathematical forms, the physical world we inhabit, and the mental world of our conscious experience. The great mystery is how the physical world, our brain, can somehow access or connect with the timeless truths of the Platonic world to produce the mental world.
Which leads to the fourth theme, the crisis of physics. Penrose shows how these deep problems, the quantum measurement problem, why the universe started in such an orderly, low-entropy state, the arrow of time, and the nature of consciousness, they all seem weirdly connected.
Yeah, he suggests maybe they're all symptoms of the same underlying gap in our understanding of fundamental physics. Solving one might unlock the others.
The book is definitely dense, but Penrose have a way of crystallizing his arguments. There's some really powerful quotes or ideas in there.
Oh, definitely. On that core distinction between simulation and real understanding, he says something like, "The judgment of truth is not a matter of a set of rules. The very essence of consciousness is this ability to understand, an ability that cannot be captured by any algorithm."
That really nails the syntax versus semantics point.
It does. And then, drawing directly from Gödel, the crucial line is basically, "A human mathematician can see the truth of a Gödel statement. The formal system itself, and thus any computer implementing it, must remain blind to it."
That's the logical hammer, showing the boundary that computation hits, but the human mind seems to cross.
Right. And maybe the most perspective-shifting quote is this one. "It is our present lack of understanding of the fundamental laws of physics that prevents us from coming to grips with the concept of mind in physical or logical terms."
So he's telling us, stop looking just at neuroscience or computer science for the answer. Look deeper into physics.
Look to the foundations of reality itself.
Okay, so bringing this home, what are the real life applications? How should this perspective change how we think or act, especially now with AI everywhere?
Well, first, it provides a really crucial framework for guiding AI strategy. It urges a kind of nuance, We should absolutely appreciate and develop weak AI. These are the tools that simulate intelligence brilliantly for specific tasks: language translation, medical diagnosis, image generation, summarizing texts like this AI helped prepare. They're incredibly useful.
But temper the expectations for strong AI, the truly conscious, understanding machine.
Exactly. Penrose's argument suggests that's impossible with current computational approaches. We'd need that fundamental breakthrough in physics first, which might be centuries away, or never. So maybe let's focus AI development on powerful tools, not on trying to create conscious beings before we even understand what consciousness is.
That also has big implications for us, for humans, in education and work. It really highlights the importance of valuing true insight.
Absolutely. If machines get better and better at routine tasks, data processing, following procedures, all the algorithmic stuff, then our unique human advantage lies precisely in the non-algorithmic: creativity, critical thinking, intuition, ethical judgment, genuine understanding.
So we should focus on cultivating those skills, the things machines can't do.
That's the implication. Fostering that spark of insight, that ability to see the bigger picture or find a novel solution, that becomes even more valuable in an age of AI.
And finally, Penrose's whole approach is just a masterclass in the interdisciplinary approach.
Oh, for sure. Tackling a problem as huge as consciousness requires knitting together insights from math, physics, philosophy, biology. You can't stay in one silo. It's a great model for how we might approach other really complex, hard problems facing society.
So, reflecting on the book, what was your biggest takeaway or surprise?
For me, it's the sheer audacity and scale of the argument. You know, it's easy to dismiss the Orch-Oehr theory about microtubules as speculative, and it faces significant scientific hurdles. But the reason Penrose is forced to propose something so radical is the power of his initial argument, starting from Gödel.
Right, the mathematical argument seems much harder to refute.
Exactly. He uses mathematical logic to paint computation into a corner, forcing the conclusion that some kind of new non-computable physics must be involved in consciousness. Whether it's Orch-Oehr or something else, that logical necessity is what really stayed with me. It shifts the whole debate.
Yeah, what surprised me most, I think, was that specific link to microtubules. The idea that these tiny intracellular structures could be the stage for quantum computations underlying our conscious thoughts. It's just mind-boggling.
It is.
It makes you feel like our subjective experience, our very awareness, might be plugged into the most fundamental, mysterious workings of the universe at the quantum gravity level. It connects the human mind to the cosmos in this incredibly direct and unexpected way.
It certainly makes you appreciate the depth of the mystery. The mind isn't just complex wiring, it might be a window into the undiscovered laws of nature.
A profound thought to end on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acontra Foundation.